Mini-episode 1020 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. You have with you today FDH Lounge dignitaries, original dignitaries, that is, Rick Morris and Chris Galloway. We are breaking down the NFL division by division for 2018. We've got the AFC North right now, and a division that in recent years has pretty much been owned, I will editorialize and say, unfortunately, as a native Clevelander, by the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't see too much changing this year, if anything, in that regard. I've got my predictions from Fantasy Football Draftology 2018, which are a little bit dated. These were made coming into training camp, but I'm going to largely stick by what I've got here. I've got the Steelers at 10-6 winning the division, Baltimore at 9-7 backdooring as a wild card, just because it's hard to find six teams in the AFC that you have that much confidence in as a wild card team. Baltimore is generally at least in the mix. It's not always the six most deserving teams. I don't think Baltimore is one of the six most deserving teams, but that almost makes me pick them because it's usually a little counterintuitive on who slides into the last spot or so. I've got Cincinnati at 6-10. I actually think they have a chance to underachieve on that one there. They have a chance to be one of the worst teams in the NFL this year. But 6-10, I think, is just about their ceiling. Maybe 8-8 is, but I got them at 6-10. The Browns at 5-11. I said that a year ago. It was famous last words. I got them there right now. There's a lot of people, a lot of my friends in Cleveland, they're like, 8-8. Oh, they could make the playoffs if everything goes well. So, you know, Browns fan being Browns fan is all I got to say on that one. But this division, again, much like the AFC East, which we already covered, Chris, to me this division is a lot more of the more things change, the more they stay the same. At least in this year, you can see that that dynamic, unlike in the AFC East, is not going to hold much beyond this year. But I think for this year, we are where we've been for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. I think your order of finish is going to be Steelers, Ravens, Bengals, Browns. Steelers, you know, that offense, you know, we've talked in the past about what happens when you lose an offensive coordinator. You know, the Steelers are one of those teams that I think are going to miss Todd Haley in the beginning of the season. And no matter how much Ben Roethlisberger's thrilled, he's gone. And so I would look for them to struggle a little bit in the beginning of the year between that bad defense and the new offensive coordinator. Again, I think that 11-5 is their ceiling, but they're so talented on offense that they're going to win the division. And the Ravens, you know, I'm with you. They're that pencil them in for 9-7, and you know, competitive, good defense, really good defense, good secondary, and you know, it's really that running game get going, and so that Flacco can do the play action that he loves so much, and the Bengals to me are an enigma. I look at this team and I go, I look at last year and I think, boy, you know, Andy Dalton, you know, he's not getting them anywhere. But they do have talent on this roster that if it can stay healthy, you know, they can play with anybody. And I just don't know what to make of them. And so I've kind of got them penciled in really, I kind of close. I'm giving them a little bit benefit of the doubt and going about 8-8 with them and sort of battling for a wild card to the end and coming up short. And then the Browns are going to be greatly improved, at least from a competitive standpoint. Their schedule is just utterly brutal. I mean, when you're a team coming off of 1-31 the last 2 years, you really need a break and have the league give you maybe not give them the fifth hardest schedule in the league, but nope, the NFL did them dirty. So, you know, the Browns, I think they're greatly improved, and I have them at 6-10. And my guess is that by the bye week and, what is it, week 10, week 11, Browns fans will understand why Bills fans were pulling their hair out about Tyrod Taylor. He's steady, good leadership, good dude, but he'll leave a lot of throws on the field. And when you've got weapons that the Browns could have, and Landry, and especially Gordon, potentially Callaway, and you're leaving those big plays on the field for field goals or to dink and dunk, you know, by week 10, Browns fans will be screaming for Baker Mayfield. But that said, Browns greatly improved, and they finished at 6-10, and you know, sort of take that next big step towards being respectable again.
I agree with a lot of what you said right there. And as far as the Bengals go, they are sort of inscrutable, as it were. The old saying about mystery wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in a bowl of Skyline chili. That's the Cincinnati Bengals. And as far as you know.
How it's the cinnamon that makes them so awful.
Yeah, exactly. And Andy Dalton, the soulless ginger, going back out there for yet another season of essentially mediocrity at best for this franchise. Again, they got some players on the defensive side of the ball. You can never sleep on guys like Dunlap and Geno Atkins and some of the guys that they got, but just not enough depth, I think. Almost sort of, again, akin to the whole Stars and Scrubs kind of thing. I think that's why they're a little bit hard for us to pin down. You got A.J. Green out there as one of the best wide receivers in the world. Even if we don't tend to think of him as much in that way after the last couple of years, he's been a little bit quieter, but he's still a sensational player. And again, you look at it, Baltimore, that's a weird situation there. And Lamar Jackson, they've already gone for the quarterback of the future, so Joe Flacco is kind of a lame duck. I'm just waiting as the season goes along here, because I've already heard some rumors that potentially the Harbaugh period of time could be coming to an end there. I just heard a rumor the other day about him to Notre Dame after the season if Brian Kelly underachieves. What I'm waiting for, Chris, are the John Harbaugh to Michigan rumors. That'll be something.
Well, that would make for some really great Thanksgiving dinners.
Yes.
But I will say this. The Ravens, look, Lamar Jackson is a great story and an athlete. We see some of the stuff in the preseason of what he's potentially capable of. But he's still a project. I mean, you watch his accuracy, his unwillingness to stay in the pocket, even in the preseason against third, fourth stringers. These fans that are like, oh, is he going to take over for Flacco in this year? It's like, you'll be lucky if he's taken over that QB spot in year three. I've not been a Lamar Jackson believer. I'm still not after what I saw. He clearly has some ability. But I just worry that the way he throws the ball, his lack of accuracy, unwillingness to stay in the pocket, unless they can get those tendencies out of him, he's going to be a bust. And, they're talking about trading RG3, potentially, and, keeping him and then trading him. And I'm like, why would you do that? Because if Flacco gets hurt, at least RG3 has experience and has looked much better in the preseason than Lamar Jackson. So I think if you're the Ravens, you got to hold on to RG3. And obviously, I understand why they want to move off of Flacco, that contract. And last year he was like the 32nd worst quarterback in the league. I mean, he's been lousy. Now, I expect him to bounce back this year. They've increased the talent level. But my Brian Tannehill question I give to you when it comes to the Bengals is this the last year of Andy Dalton? If they go 7-9, 8-8, and he just, again, leaves things on the field or just doesn't. At what point do you just say, we've got to get better at this position?
Here's the thing. I think not, because the Bengals, in a way, are almost kind of a throwback. I'm going to go to a discussion that I had off air with a friend of mine the other day. And it was about, of all things, and you're not going to see the immediate tie-in here, Vince Dooley at Georgia. Because we were talking about this era of Georgia football already is shaping up to be the best they've ever had, and that they look like they're going to be a power into the 2030s at this point. But Vince Dooley, a guy who is lionized there, that national championship in the early 80s under, when he had the Herschel Walker years, that was when it happened. He got there, I think, in like 64. And it took them a decade and a half plus of getting abused by Bear Bryant and just the seasons in the 70s that they had. And like Georgia went through a period of time under Vince Dooley that you would never see today. The leash is that much tighter everywhere in football. But with the Bengals, with Andy Dalton and with Marvin Lewis, It's a throwback. It's a throwback to the way football was decades ago, before football was, quite frankly, as popular and as covered in the media, and before social media, and when things could be frozen in time for a long period of time. That's how the Bengals are right now, Chris. So no, the safe bet is to say Marvin Lewis and Andy Dalton will be back next year, because that's the way it's been for so long.
That's a great analogy and so true about the Bengals. I mean, Mike Brown doesn't like change, and he certainly is more than happy to go 8-8 every year.
Yeah.
Make his money on his team, be conservative, and, you know, it's fine. If we go 8-8, make the playoffs, don't make the playoffs, okay, whatever, bring everybody back, let's do it again. You're certainly right. There certainly is not a push from ownership to really go outside the box or really, you know, swing for the fences with some dramatic trades or, you know, the Bengals were never going to trade for Khalil Mack, right? Like, they were never going to, like, let's go all in and let's just, you know, nope. I mean, you're right. And I think that's Mike Brown, right? I mean,
right.
That's just, that's that personality. He doesn't, I don't think he cares.
Right.
I mean, it's just, he just wants to run a good company almost, you know? Well, you know, we're competitive in the marketplace and, you know, we make our money, and we've got our, you know, league dollars and our local subsidies from the city. It's all good. It's all the budget's balanced, and it's all good. Oh, we're playing football this Sunday? No, I agree. That's a great analogy.
Thank you.
You're probably right. It's going to drive Bengals fans nuts because they can't, you know, they're going to be like, can we draft a quarterback, you know, in the top 10? Can we move up? Can we, you know, who's the best quarterback next year? Can we try to upgrade the position? But you're probably right. That probably won't happen. But I will tell you this. You look long-term, Big Ben's going to retire. Steelers' defense is terrible, comparatively. Flacco's out. If Jackson isn't the guy, the Ravens are, and they're getting old in the tooth on the defense, too, the Ravens, as good as it is. They're going to have a drop-off, possibly a new coach. Bengals will always muddle the 8-8. This division is set up, if Dorsey and company do it right, with the salary cap space, you know, the second youngest team in the league, the Browns are in a position, my God, to actually dominate this division the way the Steelers have for over a decade in the next decade.
Well, let me ask you.
The other teams are dropping off. The Browns are finally in a position, if they have their quarterback, they're finally in a position to be that you pencil them in for a decade to win the AFC North and go to the playoffs. They are positioned. Now, whether they get it done is a different matter, but we're on the cusp of that.
I end this by asking you this. I have a question for you, and that is, if you are alarmed by, again, I have noted over a period of time, guideposts for fear as a Browns fan, and one of them is the indiscriminate brooming of players from old regimes. You look at some of the cuts that have happened here, both Orchard and Nassib, and some of the guys that have gone down. I think Terry Pluto indicated in the Plain Dealer it's like a 60% turnover from a year ago. The whole guilty until proven innocent thing of judging players from a past regime, I don't know that I can point to any one instance that threatens me that much as far as anything they've done, so maybe that undermines my point. But I do tend to see more of the same syndrome so far.
Well, all right, I know it feels that way. But, I mean, let's have a moment of reality here. Look, I like Carl Nassib, and I told you on this program that he's the kind of, you know, depth player you need, you know, to be a successful football team. He's not a starter. You know, he's a spot starter. He comes in for, you know, a bunch of plays, you know, relieves a guy here and there. You know, to me, I always felt like a Bill Belichick type of player.
Okay.
Let's be honest. He overachieved his senior year at Penn State. Like, he came out of nowhere, overachieved like crazy, and got himself drafted. Nate Orchard has always been sort of middling. You don't have a great team, defensive front, when Jamie Meter is the guy you're relying on. I like Jamie Meter. Hell of a great guy. Great story, right? Local guy makes good, local college, you know. But the reality is that you're not a heavy playoff contender when you're starting a Jamie Meter. I think some of the stuff that Dorsey's done is he's had to make some tough decisions. And obviously, to your point, you know, like, well, he's purging the roster. Well, obviously, when you're in year one and you're purging anybody off the roster, yeah, it looks like you're getting rid of the other guy's players. Well, because they were all the other guy's players.
Right.
So there's no way around that. So it's why it always feels that way. But, you know, Dorsey's left a lot of guys, you know, he's left a lot of guys in place. You know, there, I mean, look, Peppers and Kindred and, you know, there's a bunch of these guys that are Sashi guys or, you know, or even some Farmer guys. So we knew there was going to be roster turnover. Dorsey told us, like, day one, we need to get real football players. I thought that was a lousy way to phrase that.
Right.
And very insulting to your players. It's very unprofessional.
Yes.
And it gave me a clue as to why John Dorsey got run out of Kansas City.
Right.
That right now we're in the honeymoon phase and everybody loves his energy and his attaboys and, you know. But the reality is that kind of, those kind of things you say when you get to mature teams, it starts to grate on people. Well, why did you just insult our entire roster? You
right.
know, these guys are professional. They're working hard.
Right.
So it was a bit of a, it was a dick comment. And then he tried
yes.
to walk it back. Like, well, I said, I misspoke. I mean, I should have phrased it that way. Fine. I'll give him that one pass. But it did give me a clue as to why he got run out of Kansas City, which we still don't really have a clear picture of because Cleveland media is terrible, and none of them have gotten on a plane and gone to Kansas City and done some digging around to say, why did a guy who turned around a franchise, made all these great draft picks, get run out of town? Like, what is the story here?
That's a great point. Yeah.
So I other than the Chad Thomas pick, you know, which I didn't like in round three. I like his first draft. I mean, I'm not unhappy with it. And I like some of his offseason moves. I know I do, you don't.
Not really.
But I do think that you're being a little critical in that we knew this roster was going to turn over. You don't go 0-16 and bring that roster back. You
no.
are purging the hell out of it.
Understood.
And I think that is where Browns fans are hanging at. Maybe it's a little crazy at times talking playoffs, but hanging their hat of hope in terms of you got a bunch of new coaches, you know, quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, you know, Hard Knocks yes has exposed that Hugh Jackson is who we feared he was, and then you know we've got a new whole new front office and scouts, and we now have you know the roster is now 58% new. So what I've noticed in the Hard watching Hard Knocks is I think that was necessary. So you look at these players, they're not owning 0-16. These guys work here. I mean, most of them.
Right.
And they're like, you know, they don't identify with 0-16. And I think that's the first start in turning that ship around.
Okay.
Is that these guys aren't beaten down with that season, most of this roster. And the guys he's left behind have enough talent that they're not the guys that were, you know, if you will, quote unquote, responsible for the train wreck. So I know you said that in the past. I think in the past you've been right. And I think a lot of that in the past has been driven by the fact that what do? Every time we change a GM and a coach, we change systems, right?
Right.
We go 4-3 and we get rid of all our 4-3 guys. And then we spend 2 years reloading with a bunch of 3-4 guys. And then we change GMs and coaches, and then like then the guys go, oh, we're running the 4-3. All those guys we just got rid of would have been great. And it's, oh, we got to start all over.
That's right.
And it's driven me nuts. So I don't care if Hugh Jackson gets canned after this season, or even Greg Williams. Greg Williams has a 3-year shelf life with any team before every team wants to literally murder him. So it's, you know, he's in the middle of his run with the Browns. Next year will be his last. But after Greg Williams, I don't care. You better get a guy that comes in and runs the same damn system. We don't want to start over a 3-year process of having to restock with new players that fit the way they play defense.
Exactly.
Now we're not playing man. We're going to a zone. Oh, we need guys that can play a zone. Oh, there goes the whole secondary. So that typically to me was it's not necessarily an ego thing. Like, I'm getting rid of your guys. It's they change everything.
Okay.
And then they go out looking for new players to fit the new system. And so we just end up in this constant recycle process. So my hope is that the Haslams have learned, if they've learned anything and are not as dumb as a doorknob, is that if you're going to change coaches, fine. You know, Greg Williams runs a certain style of defense. Bring in a guy who's qualified, knows what he's doing, is professional, and runs a similar system. So you don't have to purge and start over. And I think if we do that, it goes a long way towards addressing what, you know, you talk about in terms of the sort of constant when it comes to the Browns front office.
All right, last note on my part. At least you didn't give credit to John Dorsey for not purging Myles Garrett. I applaud you for setting the bar higher than that.
Well, I know it was tough, you know, but he probably, you know, thought, well, you know, the best ability is availability. You missed six games.
Well, again, the most colorful franchise in football, God bless them, the Cleveland Browns are across the bear. But the AFC North, that wraps up our coverage of that here today in the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.